A smart thermostat can actively learn what your preferences are, and you can control it remotely. Whereas a programmable thermostat, you go and you stand there and you program it, but they can have many settings. So you can do daytime, you can do nighttime, you can do weekend, you can do during the week. So you have it already done for you, and then it is automatic. That's the beauty of a programmable thermostat.
The U.S. Department of Energy reports that the typical U.S. family spends at least $2,000 a year on home utility bills. And unfortunately, a lot of energy is wasted through leaky windows or ducts, old appliances, or inefficient heating and cooling systems. Unless it feels too warm or too cold, most Americans don't pay much attention to where the home thermostat is set. However, our love of technology, coupled with a desire to reduce energy consumption and costs, may change that. On today's Sound Living, using technology and other proven practices to help control energy use and costs. Sound Living is a weekly public affairs program produced by Research and Extension at Kansas State University. I'm Jeff Wickman. Smart thermostats, those that can actively learn about homeowner temperature preferences and be controlled remotely by smartphones and tablets, are becoming more popular, especially in new home construction. Depending on which smart thermostat is used, consumers can expect to cut their heating and cooling bills by 15% to 30%. While smart thermostats are convenient, K-State Research and Extension Family Resource Management Specialist Elizabeth Kish says there are some simple steps we can all take, including behavioral changes, to lower our energy consumption and yearly energy costs. Elizabeth, smart thermostats are really just kind of in their infancy, I would say. About 3% of the population is using their tablets to run things at home. But it's something that people really should think about, because not only through the smartphones, but just programmable thermostats, you can save a lot of money.
That's right. And you can also, I would like to say, just save a lot of money through manual thermostats as well. And it's how you use them. And especially if you have a heat pump, you need to have a programmable thermostat and use it that way. Looking through the information and the research available through the Department of Energy and other sources, you need to think about adjusting your thermostat and leaving it for about 8 to 10 hours, and that's where you get the most savings.
So just turning it down for an hour or two is not going to make a huge difference.
No, it really won't make a huge difference, because it takes time for it to adjust.
So what we're really looking at here is those longer periods of time when you're away from home, like maybe during the workday or in the evening?
Correct. If you're gone for work for 8 to 10 hours and your home is empty, or maybe you have some animals at home with you, that would be a really good time, because you're not there, especially for cooling, but also for heating in the winter. And we may worry about our domestic animals for cooling in the winter, though. Obviously, they have fur coats, so they're probably going to be okay by turning down the thermostat.
When we talk about turning down the thermostat, most people think 2, 3, 4 degrees, but sometimes they recommend even more than that, 5
yeah,
and more.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. It is about 8 degrees in the winter. Turn down your thermostat. Then you would turn it up again when you get home, and then at night maybe turn it down 8 degrees. Now, it depends what your base temperature is. If you're sort of at 68 as a base temperature when you're home in the winter, then if you turn it down to 60 when you're gone, have it go back up to 68 when you get home, go back to 60 at night. In the summer, if you keep it sort of at a base comfortable temperature for you between maybe 72 and 74, it's opposite. You would turn it up, called a set up instead of a set back, about 7 degrees during the day and about 4 degrees at night.
So the beauty of the smart thermostat or the programmable thermostat is you can set it to start adjusting before you arrive back home.
Right. A smart thermostat can actively learn what your preferences are, and you can control it remotely. Whereas a programmable thermostat, you go and you stand there and you program it, but they can have many settings. So you can do daytime, you can do nighttime, you can do weekend, you can do during the week. So you have it already done for you, and then it is automatic. And especially if you have a heat pump, it might take a little while for it to get up to its full whatever it's doing. That's the beauty of a programmable thermostat. But again, if you have a manual thermostat, and about 47% of homeowners do have manual thermostats, so almost half of us, you can still see energy savings. You just have to remember to do it.
Would it be worth someone's time to contact their utility company and ask them? Because I know there are times that Westar offers pre-programmable thermostats.
Right. And you can also get, if you're upgrading your heating and cooling equipment, and then you upgrade to a programmable thermostat, you can get some rebates on those items, and some from the electric or the utility companies, and some directly from the manufacturers. So not only do you save on the cost of the new air conditioner heating unit, you also then would save over time because it will be more energy efficient in the long run. The other thing that utility companies will ask you, if you're willing to, during periods of peak demand, be cycled sort of on and off. And so they sort of take a little bit of control. And for that, they usually give you some sort of decreased rate or perhaps a little bit of a rebate at the end of the season.
You mentioned the equipment itself, and that's something that people probably should look at. If you have a unit that is probably 15 years or older, you would probably start saving money just by replacing that.
Right. And in fact, I looked into that this summer for my home unit, and it was only 10 years, and the estimates and that I got were that even replacing that, and it's only 10 years old. So, yeah, 10 to 15 years might be about the life of a furnace air conditioner unit, especially a joint unit. But there are some things you can do that don't involve that expense. However, if you're thinking about in the next couple of years, you know, get some estimates this year, and then you have an idea about what it would really cost. Because many people have a single heating and cooling unit, although larger homes or, you know, if people have upgraded, they may have zones. So you want to make sure that you get the units that's the right size for what you need, because that's very important. If it's underpowered or too small, you'll end up paying more, and you won't get the temperature that you would like to have in the house. So here's some tips for lowering your cooling costs, but some of them also relate to lowering your heating costs, I believe. We talked about the programmable thermostat. Ceiling fans can really help, because you can raise your thermostat setting about 4 degrees, actually, without impacting your comfort. Insulation for both cooling and heating, especially your attic walls, if you have cracks or any openings, that can really make a difference. We don't often think about that, but it's just like happening, you know. In the winter, the hot air is coming out. In the summer, the hot air is coming in, probably. Also, you know, when you're thinking about lowering your cooling costs when it's really hot, think about, you don't want to heat your house with appliances. If it's really hot, you might not want to cook dinner using your stove or your oven. Think about grilling. Think about a cold supper, you know. Some of these things that we used to do sort of automatically, and it's probably maybe refreshing too. Also think about when you're using your washer and your dryer, right? Especially your dryer, because that really does heat up your house.
And that's been really tough this year because of the high humidity. It takes a lot longer for the drying cycle to get through.
Yeah. And it's a lot less efficient to dry clothes by air. If it's so humid, it's going to take them longer. If it's a nice sort of dry day with a bit of a breeze, you can hang your clothes out and they'll probably dry pretty quickly. But think about that. So, you know, you might run the dryer in the evening or first thing in the morning when it's cooler. Install energy efficient window coverings and use them. You know, when you leave for the day, close your windows so you're not getting that radiational heat. And then when you get home, you can open them so you don't feel claustrophobic. And likewise, in the winter, you can do that. I mean, you want to get radiational heating in the winter, but at night, you want to be sure to close things so when it cools off outside, you're not letting that cold air in the house. Obviously, if you buy Energy Star qualified air conditioning units and heating units, those are more efficient. And then if you use a bathroom fan when you take a shower or a bath and your range hood when you're cooking, this can help remove heat and humidity from your home too. So in the winter, you know, you want to remove the humidity, but you kind of want the heat. And sometimes you want a bit of humidity, too, if it's really dry and you're getting shocked from your carpeting. Basically, a lot of what we do to decrease our cooling costs, we can also do to decrease our heating costs, with the exception of the windows. You probably want to leave your curtains open during the day in the winter if it's a sunny day.
You mentioned all of the different products that you can get that are Energy Star rated. That's something that you can find just by going to the store. It'll have a little symbol on it.
It will have a symbol. Also, there is energystar.gov, and it gives you rules of thumb for proper use of programmable thermostats, talks about how to find Energy Star and efficient equipment and how to save energy at home. Also, how to assess your home. I hope we know that utility companies will do home energy audits. You can do some of it on your own. If you're really serious about lowering your energy costs, you know, have your energy company come out. You know, we sometimes think that, oh, they want us to spend more because it's good for them. But yet, the more we spend, the more capacity they have to provide it. So there's a balance there. And really, I think that the energy companies would like us to use less energy because then their current power plant is good. It lasts longer.
And it does really spotlight all of those air leaks that you have.
Right. And there, I think that those energy audits are really good for the air leaks around the door, the windows, any other places that you might not even think of, actually. Outlets. If you've ever touched an outlet in the winter and it's cold, you know it's leaking energy.
Did you also look at the what they call the phantom electricity, where you might have a television that you think is off, but it's actually zapping some energy?
Yeah, and especially in the summer, you know, that can, or if you're going on vacation, there is this phantom energy, and people, you know, have different ways of dealing with it. If you have all of your power cords, say, for your television and any of those kind of equipment, you might just turn it all off. Anytime you've got a dot glowing, that means you're using energy. Yes, it's a low rate of energy, but it is energy. Especially if you're going to be gone on vacation for a couple weeks, you know, unplug those things.
Light bulbs are another thing that will really zap electricity.
The high energy efficient light bulbs, but even regular light bulbs, are more efficient than they used to be. But if you leave a light on in a room where nobody is, you're wasting energy, right? And some people think about, well, I'm coming back. Well, how fast are you coming back? You know, I think we all got the message from our parents, turn the lights off, right? Over time, it adds up. And some of these are very small savings, but over time, they add up. And so that's what it is. And it's just habits.
A lot of that kind of reminds me of the, you know, were you born in a barn? Shut the door.
Yes.
And I understand that a lot of people stand with their refrigerator door open and a lot of cooling is lost that way.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, the thing about the refrigerator is there's cooling lost. And when you keep things in the door, I mean, that's like the warmest part of the refrigerator. So you don't want to lose the energy. And I think we all know it's not efficient. Sometimes you have to do it. And it's a habit. When it comes to paying our monthly bills, we know what our fixed costs are, right? We know our fixed cost is usually housing, probably a car, if you have a car payment, if you pay your insurance monthly, you know, then we have our variable costs, and our variable costs are food and energy, usually utilities, right? So water use varies. Sometimes if you pay sewer separately, that'll vary. So to get a handle on those variable costs, this is what you can do.
And if you're not on a levelized plan,
yes,
it can be a real shock in some months because you'll have those peaks where you use a lot more than you're going to use a lot more energy in August probably than you use in March.
That's true. And also with the sort of the way the billing cycle works, you know, what we use in July, we're going to be billed in August. What we use in August, we're going to be billed in September. And if we have a warm early part of September, that's going to hit in October, right? And just like really cold, I think often my highest heating bill is actually March because February is cold usually. So there is that delay, but you mentioned levelized billing, and that can be really helpful for families too. That way you can plan ahead. You know what it is for 12 months, but if you make some of these changes, it will take a while to catch up, but then in the next 12-month period, your total monthly bill might be less.
Well, and the nice thing about this is, although, you know, replacing a furnace or an air conditioner would be expensive, a lot of these are kind of simple, inexpensive fixes.
Right. And some of it's behavioral fixes, right? You really can get used to keeping your home a little bit warmer in the summer, especially if you use ceiling fans or other fans. If the air is circulating, it doesn't feel so warm. And you can get used to keeping a little bit cooler in the winter. I suppose we've all remember stories of grandparents or parents say, well, how many sweaters do you have on? Or put on another pair of socks or whatever. And, you know, some people don't want to live like that. And I totally get it. But just a little bit, even a couple degrees when you're at home, and then this more significant, you know, 6 to 8 degrees or 8 to 10 degrees when you're gone. And that's what it's all about. If you do the easy things like turn it down in the winter and up in the summer when you're gone, you're not even affected by it.
That's K-State Research and Extension Family Resource Management Specialist Elizabeth Kish. More information on reducing energy use is available at energy.gov. You can also find information at all county and district extension offices and on the extension website www.ksre.ksu.edu. Sound Living is a weekly public affairs program produced by Research and Extension at Kansas State University. I'm Jeff Wickman, and this is the K-State Radio Network.